I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to season 11 of the Parenting Aces podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we are proud members of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I want to apologize for the poor video quality once again. Just a reminder that I am in temporary housing these days and don't have my normal setup, but hopefully the sound quality is good enough that you guys can enjoy this podcast with a fellow tennis parent. A few weeks ago, I got an email from a dad who is part of our Facebook community, part of our Parenting Aces community, and he has two children, a daughter who is currently playing D2 college tennis here in the States, and a younger son who they've decided to go on a different path with. So I'm really excited to bring Hugo Aguirre to the podcast this week for him to share his story of two different ways of developing junior tennis players to help them reach their goals. Before I bring Hugo on, however, just a quick reminder, if you haven't become a premium member of Parenting Aces yet, we would love to have you join our community. We do have some great perks for those of you who do decide to become premium members, such as complimentary webinars like the one we did last week with Brian Park of APEAK, which our premium members can now find on the member discounts page on parentingaces.com. So for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with fellow tennis parent, Hugo Aguirre. Welcome to the Parenting Aces podcast, Hugo. It's so great to finally meet you. And just so our audience knows, you are coming from Italy joining us.
Yes. Hey, Lisa, how are you? Great to meet you finally. And yes, we're actually in Italy right now. In a suburb in Florence, so about 15 minutes away from Florence.
Well, I feel so sorry for you having to be in that horrible, horrible place. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's so great, yeah.
Before we jump into the meat of our conversation today, I would love for you to give our audience a little bit of your backstory and how you got involved in tennis. Did you grow up playing? Is it something you picked up when your kids started playing? How did that all go down?
Yeah. So, I grew up playing tennis, but I started late between soccer and tennis. And then obviously where every kid has to kind of make a choice, I went actually the soccer route. I'm from Ecuador originally. And then I went to college in the US for soccer.
Oh, wow.
In New Hampshire, actually. So yeah. Then my whole life playing soccer until I think a few years ago, but yeah. And then when my kids were born, we decided to go the tennis route.
And you have a daughter who is currently playing Division II tennis here in the States.
Yeah. So it started with her. She also started a little bit late because we were in the transition between, so she was born in the US, and then when she was 4 months old, we moved to Ecuador. My wife, I met her in college. She's from Boston. But we decided to move to Ecuador. And when kind of she started, she was, I think, 7 or 8. And we were kind of in that transition of moving to the U.S. We would move to Miami. And that's kind of, she tried different things. She was in ballet and soccer and all these different things. And we started playing tennis, and I kind of started feeding the ball to her. And that's basically how it started. And then ever since then, you know how I imagine a lot of parents are, from academy to academy. Some work for you, some don't work for you, and you're just kind of always looking around for that perfect fit. And then I'm jumping ahead with my son. I kind of want to do things differently, but yes. So finally, she made it. We got the whole school thing figured out. She studies in a school where it's kind of for athletes or kids that just are not able to attend full time. Mm-hmm. They have that flexibility to do their thing. If they can go to the class, they go to school, that's perfect. They do have a physical school in Western Florida where we were living. And if not, you can connect to your teachers and it's just one-on-one. So, so it's great. Yeah.
So she,
it was her ex-coach, her coach when that had got her that kind of, into that school.
Okay. So she did a mix of in-person classes in the actual classroom and virtual school. And at what stage or what age or grade did she start doing that?
So she was, I believe, in sixth grade.
Okay.
And it was a battle there with my wife. And we actually went to the school and I had already spoken to the state of Florida or the school board. And they said that the school that she went to, they actually have a mix. They can do hybrid. So they do, like, for example, 3 hours of in school and they can do the rest at home. I think it was like 4 classes at school and then 3 classes at home, and she would go certain days a week. And when we went there to tell them or ask them about the program, they didn't even know they had it.
Oh, wow.
They were like, I spoke to the school board. You guys have this option for kids that do other things and blah, blah. So they were like, okay. So we did that. Again, it was, my wife was, no, but she has to have a normal life and all this stuff, you know. And then finally, I think she did that for 2 years. And then high school, she never went to high school, like normal. She started at Florida Virtual School. Mm-hmm. And then finally until we got to this school. But yeah, it was in high school. And it was a kind of actually a father thing as well, where you hear the dangers of high school and big, these big public schools. And it was kind of like, I don't want her to do that. And I would use kind of tennis as the excuse. but it was really kind of, there was 60% that, and finally, like I said, my wife was like, oh, I want her to have normal. What's normal? I would say, what's normal? I mean, it just depends. Right. So, but now with my son, it's much easier because we already went through that and she knows that she turned out fine and she's not an antisocial and she can have friends and all that stuff. So it turned out good, but yeah.
Good. So at what point did your daughter decide or know that she wanted to play college tennis and wanted to really pursue this tennis developmental pathway to give herself that opportunity?
Ever since she started, I mean, obviously, many kids, or at least my daughter, wanted to go the kind of the pro route. But it wasn't, I think, very realistic at the time, right? Mm-hmm. We still talk about it when she graduates and maybe she'll try it out for a year or so. But when time flies, right? And then you're in 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, and it's finally there. Most kids, my daughter, school was the way, right? Get her education, play tennis, keep on growing. And she loves the whole team environment and she's really excelling. But yeah, I think always, I think she kind of always knew that she wanted to do it. And I was hard with her and with my son. And I would say, you know what, maybe tennis isn't for you. It's too much work and blah, blah. She's like, nope, never. She would say, okay, fine. Maybe you're right. I'll quit. I'll do something else. It was just, I would always kind of play with her mind as well to see really if she was tough enough. Right.
Right.
But yeah, she said tennis is what I want to do. And that was it. So yeah, she kind of knew always.
So can you talk a little bit about what the college recruiting process looked like for her?
Yep. So, luckily her coach, after all of these growing up and we went to different academies I wasn't really happy with any, and she lost almost a year of school when we found out that she hadn't really been doing much at Florida Virtual School and she wasn't really studying. We thought she was, but at the academy where they were there all day, supposedly they had like, in between. So, you know how they work in the morning and then the afternoon as well. She hadn't been doing anything. So,
school wise, you're talking about
school wise. Yes.
So she wasn't she wasn't on track to meet the eligibility requirements.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So her coach, we've had luck. Her coach knew this, the owner of this school that I was talking about. And he kind of got her in there with a scholarship. And he also has kind of a recruiting, because he could, that this is basically what he does. I think he was on tour with the WTA for a few years. But this is basically what he does, is work with kids and then put them into college. So, he really helped us with everything. If not, we would have been kind of lost, but yeah, he was kind of our guide and he really made it very simple. Where do you want to go? She said, California. She was away from them, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, California, or West Coast. So really we went to visit about maybe three or four schools and not many. And that was it. She didn't really like the ones in Arizona. She loved, where she goes in Santa Barbara and in California. So yeah, that was, it's a pretty easy decision. I know that a lot of parents, it's tough for us. Luckily, because of her coach, it was kind of smooth, right? And she also got, she had her two last years at that school. She got really, really good grades. So she was eligible for not only a tennis scholarship, but she also got the a presidential scholarship as well. So it was good to have both. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. You talked about the fact that she changed coaches and academies.
Yes.
Pretty often throughout her junior years. What were some of the factors that caused those changes?
Yeah. A lot of it was me. I don't know. It's hard to explain. Me, academies and I have never really, it's difficult to explain, but I just didn't feel like she was, more than her tennis, it was like as a person, right? So we found one in Miami. It was this Russian, and that's really when things changed. He was one of the toughest guys. I mean, he was really rough, and most of the parents pulled their kids out of there because he was too tough. And I left her there because I knew that that's what she needed, right? And he really he gave her game a big boost, and there was no really fooling around. The other counties were a lot more like, they played tennis, but it was more like social, and kids would misbehave, just be kids, I guess. And there wasn't at all a lot of discipline. And so obviously, of course, the tennis part as well. But yeah, but then it was time to move on as well. So we moved from him, and we went to other academies, and then until finally we settled with this last coach. But yeah, I just wasn't happy. I mean, with the way she was kind of evolving. So
it sounds like lack of accountability a little bit on the part of the academy or a coach, and
all of that. Yeah. And kind of academies, this thing would happen with her school, right? Where she was kind of missing, and we obviously we should have been on top of that. I'm not blaming the academy or anyone else, but things like that, right? So I just and the last one, he was kind of on top of things before you even start practice. Okay, how's school doing? What do you need? What are your grades like? And if you better tell me the truth, if not, I'm going to call the school, right? So. Yeah. It's things like that, right? Where the other ones were just like, okay, whatever.
And did you feel like as a parent that you were getting the information you needed from these various academies that she attended? Or was that part of the reason for the academy jumping as well?
Yeah, it was. No, I wasn't getting what I needed. And sometimes we would get into not fights or anything, but it was just discussions over... but many of them don't really want parents involved, right? And I had that issue, right? It's like we do our thing over here. And actually the last academy she was at, we had an issue because I took her to this other, you know, tennis is very like this, and they're all like very, oh no, this is my student and this is my player. And so I took her over there kind of like to see how it was with him, and they found out it was a big issue. I'm like, why is this a big issue? I'm just like seeing what's best for her. But a lot of it was because I wasn't really getting the information I needed.
Tournament wise, was she playing a lot of tournaments, not a lot of tournaments? Was she staying local? Was she traveling? How did that work in her junior development years?
Yep. So she was playing tournaments. She a lot local. I worked always in technology my whole career. So I would travel a lot within Latin America, the Caribbean. And then when I had to go for work, sometimes, not always, I think we did maybe 5 or 6 ITF junior tournaments in Trinidad and Tobago, Dominican Republic, just places that I had to go for work. And then I said, okay, let's plan to for you to play a tournament. But mostly it was local until we got to the new coach where he says, look, none of it matters. None of these ranking stuff where other coaches are like, what's ranking up? None of it matters. Just play women's opens and just play. It's, sometimes people get caught up in the whole rankings and then this and number one. I sometimes laugh. My kid is the number one 10-year-old.
Right.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So,
A lot local. We were trying to not spend so much money going crazy because I heard all these stories about people that do all these tournaments and travel and all that stuff. By the time the kid is 14, 15, when they really do kind of need it, 16 and travel and all that, they had run out of money. So it was like they were doing all this stuff at 10, 11 years old when it wasn't necessary. Mute, sorry.
All right. So a little Sully barking break. Sorry about that. So we're talking about the fact that, you know, how many tournaments so many of these kids play and the fact that a lot of families are spending a lot of time and money traveling to tournaments and to what end, really? And you were saying, Hugo, that your daughter's coach, you know, finally said to you, none of that matters. She just needs to play and get better.
And he was very, none of it matters. And I would say the ranking is said, forget about the ranking matter and just play local tournaments, women's opens. There are a lot in Florida. There are always tournaments and just play. I mean, it doesn't matter. And if she does play, for example, one of his things was if she does play, the juniors just always play up. 14, you're playing 16s, just always play up because it doesn't really matter anything. Mm-hmm. If you're 11 and you're or winning or 12 and winning the under 12, it doesn't matter. Just play and play older ones and play stronger kids and just go out there and compete and have fun, right? But yeah.
And do you feel
I was one of those that got caught up with the stuff, but it doesn't really matter. Sorry.
Yeah. Do you feel like that was good advice for her? Do you feel like it worked for her?
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It was hard at first because I was like coming into this whole new world, right? Where, wait, what? Doesn't matter? What do you mean it doesn't matter? This doesn't matter.
So, right.
Yeah. But it was great. It was great.
The college coaches
aren't spending a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, it was just local. There were always women's opens. You could play. It was just fun. Yeah.
Right. Then the college coaches really don't care what your ranking was in the 12s and 14s or even the 16s. They're looking at what kind of player you are the year before you're coming to play for them. Yeah, and what's your upside potential, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So I want to switch gears now because your daughter had this pathway that she went on. She was in a kind of combination type school environment, hybrid school environment, focusing on tennis. The academics kind of fell off for a bit, but y'all caught it in time, got that ship righted in time for college recruiting. She was recruited by a school that she has been super happy at in Santa Barbara, California. Now you've got your son who is currently 11 years old.
Yes, 9 year difference.
You are no longer living in Miami. You are living outside of Florence, Italy. Why? Why the change?
All right. So with him, I said, I'm going to do things differently. Obviously, I was kind of checking
why, though? What made you say that?
Because it easy. I said, if someone's going to screw up. Let me be the only one to screw up. I don't want to say it was them or it was him. I'll do it. I'll screw up. Or I'll make him into something great, or I'll just completely screw it up. But I'll take on that responsibility instead of always let's go here and let's go here and let's go here and let's go here. I understand that not many parents can do that, but it was just something that I felt I had to do.
In terms of coaching him, you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. Coaching him, obviously I was kind of watching him as he developed. I kind of knew I wanted to take this path, but I wasn't going to like force it on to him. Right. Mm-hmm. You have to see if your child is even athletic. Right. And you can kind of tell that at a pretty young age. I think at three, I threw him into soccer. He started getting into baseball. He loved baseball. And I could kind of tell, tennis at four, I think he picked up a racket and basketball and just everything. He loved sports. He loved being outside. And then I kind of saw his competitive side as well. Right. It was kind of scary at first, but because my daughter wasn't like that, they're completely different. But he was very competitive, and I could see he had some issues with like being on teams, where, he always gave it his 150%. And then if somebody else didn't, he would go nuts. And we would always do tennis and something else, tennis mm-hmm. and soccer, tennis and baseball, tennis and whatever it was that season. So I started coaching him. So he did obviously the academy. It was just, when you're little, when you're young, right?
Yeah.
Four, five, six, seven. There's nothing much there. Just
drills, and just fun.
Drills and coordinations and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. When COVID hit. So COVID hit, and I wasn't able to travel as much. Obviously, wasn't traveling at all. Everything was completely shut down, and we started training at home, just out there in the patio. We bought a net. I ordered a net on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I played, but I started studying tennis as well. So I got USPTA certified. I just read a lot of books, on technique. I understand that it's not that important. For me, it kind of was, especially at a young age.
Well, it is for injury prevention and understanding where you are in the court and your relationship to the ball and yada, yada. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did courses like Emilio Sanchez Casal course. I did a GPTCA, which is the Global Professional Coaching Tennis something. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'll later on in the story, but that's kind of changed many, many things. And just everything that I could read, everything that I could kind of put my hands on. My daughter helped me a lot. My daughter was just this great thing. And I look back and kind of nostalgic, and he gets like that too, because it was just, they started opening things up again, and my daughter was still over there. She just went to college. I think it was last year. But she was his hitting partner, and she would help me train him. And when they weren't hitting, cause my structure was, we would do kind of like an hour, 40 minutes of consistency, right? Control, mm-hmm. Just normal, middle to middle, cross court, volley. And she was like the one. She was, I wasn't as consistent. I didn't know how to play, but I wasn't as consistent. I wasn't playing tournaments, and I wasn't playing, but she helped me a lot. And when she wasn't, and they were done with that, I would do drills, but she would record. So I would then get home and kind of look at the videos and stuff like that.
You went all in.
I started working with this guy. I was still working. So it was kind of hard. So we would train at 7 a.m. and then do we still weren't traveling. And then we would do another session at 5:30 p.m.
Okay. So did he do school in between?
Morning. Huh?
He did school in between?
Exactly. Yep.
So
yep.
Just online, I take it.
Online because of the pandemic. Yeah, right. It was the pandemic anyway. So they did online. And then when kind of things started opening up, he went to a a charter online school. It was kind of, when my wife said, we think he's too young, so we'll just put him in another year. But then COVID hit, right? So
right.
There was nothing we could do. I said, okay, wait, it worked
and
out.
You're still in Miami at this stage of the game.
Still in Miami. I started working with this guy from the UK who was actually living in Spain. But he was a very tremendous student of the game. Because where I had trouble was kind of the day-to-day. What do I work on? What mm-hmm. do I focus on? Right. It was so
having
hard
a lesson
me.
Plan would, and a, and exactly. understanding the progression.
And I knew I had to be very organized.
Yes.
But I had so much trouble. I could, okay, the consistency, but then what am I working on? Is it a plan of a week to just focus on one thing? Or is it a month? I didn't know how to break it down. And I had trouble with the drills, right? Cause I didn't come from this. I wasn't a coach and it was just very hard for me. So he would kind of help me with that. And he would also review the videos that I would send him and we would review them together and we would connect every day. We would connect at 5 a.m. for me because it was 6-hour difference in Spain. And we would talk about the day and the videos from last night that he had reviewed. So it was lots of stuff in there. And then one day I said to my wife, sell everything. We're out. And she was wow. like, you're crazy. We're not going to do this. And she's like, I said, yeah, just let's, I mean, it, obviously we had to talk with people think I'm nuts. And my son was like 9 at the time. And she's like, look, this is fun. And this is the beautiful sport. But kind of, do you think that this may be something, this is what I want. And this is what I want to be and all this stuff. Right. He's also a little bit different than other kids, but yeah. So yeah, sell everything, we're leaving. So we went to Spain to work with this guy directly. We actually stayed with him because they had like a house where they lived upstairs. They gave us the downstairs part. And we were there for 3 months, training every day. We had to leave because of the visa residency. You're allowed as an American, obviously, for 3 months, and then we had to go. By this time, I had already with my company kind of said, yeah, it's not working. They kind of actually said it more than I did, but I had already been planning for this maybe about a year and a half without really anyone knowing. I had my little bit of savings and said, yeah. So then I had to kind of reset. Okay, so no job now. My wife was working, but I was kind of the main the earner there. And what do? So from Spain, we went directly to Ecuador. I had family there. Mm-hmm. So it was easier. And same thing. I kept on training him. I stopped working with this guy from Spain just completely and kind of learned a lot of things. And I just I started training him just myself. By this time, my daughter had left already. So in Ecuador, I had a hitting partner for him that it wasn't very expensive. Ecuador's a cheap country. So I could do things like that. So I had a hitting partner for him. It was things that I tried to do in the US, but where a hitting partner, yeah, it's going to cost you like $60 an hour or something like yeah. that. I was like the cheapest. And I'm like, yeah, that's, I can't do that. So we did that over there. Then in February, Lisa, we were okay. So he has to get his vaccines. We were going to fly to Miami to get his vaccines, and then we're going to go back to Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I made contact with someone in Hungary. And because I always knew, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't know if you want to ask me something. Or
no, go ahead. I'm just following along.
Okay, so I knew that Europe was where we needed to be, right?
How did you know that?
A few things. One was the mentality of the kids. It's very different. In the US, it's kind of like a privileged sport, so not everyone can. Mm-hmm. In Europe, it's more open. Okay. But it's kids that really don't have that much and really kind of pursue tennis out of, okay, I need to make money and I need to help my family and this is what we need to do, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different kind of mentality. It's a stronger mentality, I believe. And also the level of players that I could get for him was easier for me. It was, okay. It was just easier where you have clubs, for example, in Spain, you had clubs, every little town had their tennis club and they had great quality players and we could just go there and say, hey, can I hit? And the US was more, okay, so you have to pay and you have to do this and you have to do that. And there was one club in North Miami Beach that allowed me, because they had already, we had worked with him. So we went to Miami to get his vaccines. They said, hey, just bring him and he can play here for free and all this stuff. So they were great. But over here, I could do that a lot more than I could do over there. Okay. And the most important thing, Lisa, was financially. Hmm. In Europe, I was thinking about his future, where if we were here, you can just take a train or just drive. And for example, if he did Tennis Europe or whatever, or even if you played within Italy, right. For example, you have a lot of ITF futures tournaments where you don't have to travel much, or you don't have to spend that money.
Yeah.
Over there, it's a little bit different, right?
Right.
If you're doing the junior tennis, the ITF juniors, a lot of traveling and a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, financially, I think was one of the most important reasons why, and not now. I could have done what I was doing now, maybe in Ecuador. The level wasn't that great, but I could probably have gotten by. Later on, I knew that over here it would make more sense financially, but I just told my wife, you know what, let's just go before I kind of get used to it. And just, yeah, instead of going when he's already 15, 16.
Yeah.
Let's just go now.
So you went to Hungary. Yeah. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. I made a contact with the guy in Hungary who had a club, a tennis court. He said, look, I can, because I had met someone in Serbia before that. So this Serbian had put me in touch. We actually went to Serbia with Mateo, with my son. And we were there for like a week, but yeah, then we went back to Miami and this guy put me in touch with Hungary. And the guy said, look, it's my club, so I can rent you out the courts or you can play here at the academy and all that stuff. But yeah, look, right now I don't have the money. So, it's very cheap anyway. It's nothing compared to like the US, nothing compared to the US. But I said, you know what, just rent me out the courts. That's all I need right now. And then when I get there, we'll talk and all that stuff. So we got to Hungary. The guy, had a place for us, to rent, place cheap. It was like 2 minute walking distance from his club. We had the courts there. I think he would charge me like $5 an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was cheap.
Yeah.
And by this time I had already done GPTCA. So okay. The Global Professional Tennis, and the president of GPTCA is Alberto Castellani, which is an Italian. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to Alberto. I didn't know him or anything. I wrote to not him directly, but I found his company on Facebook. And then I said, look, I have this kid who's kind of interesting. And can we talk? And so I told him the whole story. Look, I'm over here in Ecuador, but I stopped working. I focused only on him and coaching him and all this stuff. And he's like, look, we have I have a partner where we are now in Florence, because I'm always traveling. He's on the ATP. He's doing stuff. So, but I have this guy and blah, blah, you might want to talk to him. So spoke to him. He said, send me videos of Mateo, send me how tall is he, just all these kind of things. So I sent them all that, and he said, okay, yeah, come, we'll try it out. We'll charge you this much a week. And yeah, so we were in Hungary for about 10 days, came to Italy, and we're here. They really like them. They some good players here, but most of them are older. Mm-hmm. Like 17, I think, is the youngest one, 18, 19. Most, some of them are pros, others are, might go to college, or, but yeah, they train here every day. They're pretty good. And they have a few. Mateo is the youngest one. He's 11, but they have some other ones. They have a Russian kid now who's really good, who's, I think, 12. And then another kid's 13 and 14, 15. So they kind of, it's a good mix.
Are you still coaching? Are you, or did you hand him off now to the coaches in Italy?
Yeah. So it was kind of a handoff, but we still do stuff. So the good thing is that here he's at the academy. They train in the morning and the afternoon. But I can use the courts as needed because he's in the academy anyway. So
yeah,
sometimes like Saturdays or during the week, if I want to work on something, and here it's a very different way of coaching, not in Europe, just here. Just okay. In this academy, it's very different. They focus a lot on the mental part, but on court.
Meaning so what? Give an example of what they do.
Drills that that I had never seen before. So there are many, but they'll do. So the whole concept is just like harmony and really just enjoying, and I know that you love tennis, but let's make that love grow even more, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, kind of drills, for example, where they'll use two rackets, and they have to hit with two rackets, two hands. They'll have to, for example, I saw this the other day where with a partner, they hold hands. And the coach on the other side will feed. So, but they both have to go together for the one ball until the other ball goes over here. So they have to kind of work in sync. If one says, I'm going for the ball and let's go of the hand, it's, you lost the point, right?
Interesting. And what's the, is that to develop double skills or what? I mean, what's the reasoning for that?
It's a bunch of things. I asked him the other day, the whole teamwork, doubles, but it's now you're not playing against him. Mm-hmm. Find a way to play with him. And this was funny because him.
So developing respect for,
yeah,
for your opponent.
And him and this kid had an issue. My son and this kid had an issue just like the day before. So I don't know if that drill came out of that, but I had seen it before then too, not with my son, but with other kids. But yeah, respect and work together. So other drills, for example, it's where you feed your own ball, and you feed your own ball, but you have to know your limit. Like, And if you can push your limit, so you don't just feed it right here, an easy ball, you've got to really like throw it out there and then chase it and hit
so
it. Right.
Challenge, so it's kind yourself. Of,
yeah. So it's not really the drill is not even getting the ball over the net or anything. It's really how much do you push yourself? Right. So it's,
I love that.
And I've seen some kids that don't really, they'll make it easy for themselves because what they want to do is get it in, right?
Right.
There are others that will really hit the ball into the net, and they'll kind of crash into the net as they're going because they're pushing themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of building that character and suffering a little bit because this is kind of this is a tough sport, right?
Yeah.
It's a
so tough now life. I kind of have a better understanding of, because when you emailed me, you said, you know, something mm-hmm. that is so unique is they really focus on the mental side, but on court. And I was like, I wonder what that means. Now that you're explaining this, what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm interpreting this improperly, but what I'm hearing is that they're developing the mental side, not how we think about it here in the States of mental toughness,
right.
But rather focus, pushing beyond your limits, challenging yourself to grow consistently, and developing respect for the game, for the opponent, mm-hmm. for the coach. Because if you have to self-feed, all of a sudden you now have an appreciation for how difficult right. that is, and gives yeah. you an appreciation for your coach. So it's not mental toughness per se, but it's the things that have to develop in the personality of the player in order for them to be successful on the court and in general as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And don't get me wrong, they do the normal and they play points and all this stuff, but it's exactly what you said. It's exactly what you said. It's stuff that I had never seen before.
Yeah.
And this guy even has a book. It's like the tennis will train the tennis. That's the title of the book. So it's very interesting. They have a lot of stuff in there on the different drills and things that they do.
I'm going to look that up and link it in the show notes. So those of you who want to read it, I'll have a link in the show notes to that.
And anyone who wants to get in touch with me for more information and even come and check it out. It's really different. And it's just the environment where, and it's the great thing about being at an academy where kind of before it was just my son and I, and I would have to kind of go out in Hungary. I remember going out to different clubs and have them play sets and points and all that, which is important, right?
Sure.
Now it's more of
self-contained. He's kind of
found that, but even more. Yeah. Self-contained, but now even more with other things that they do. So it's a different kind of training.
And how is Mateo responding to this?
He loves it. He's happy. Not that he wasn't happy before, but it's just a different kind. I mean, he's like
more joyful, maybe
more joyful, more appreciation for the game. Now that he's been injured, of course, when you kind of take that away from something, you get taken what you love away from you, that appreciation grows even more. Right.
Sure.
But they're just great people over here. I mean, the Italians have that kind of, they're famous for being very warm and welcoming and all that stuff. And that's how it really is. I mean, it's not, we're going through it and they're just, they're great. So it's, but Mateo loves it. Mateo can't be happier. And
what's his goal for his tennis?
We'll see where this all goes. Huh?
What's his goal for his tennis?
Mateo wants to be number one.
Professional.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
But yeah, he does what he needs to do. He works hard. We do a lot of stuff off court too. Wake up at 6 a.m., meditate together, because he does need to work a lot of that. I always told him ever since he was young, I said, look, the tennis doesn't worry me that much. Tennis, we train what we do what we need to do. Thank God, obviously he gave you talent, you're athletic and things like that. So that doesn't worry me that much. But what worries me really is this part up here.
Yeah.
And kind of
it's the great unknown, that. Isn't it?
Exactly. So Alberto Castellani, he always said, not always said, but he said that they did a kind of a survey to the top, I think 50 players or something like that on the ATP tour. GPTCA is an association that he founded with Tony Nadal and another, I think it was Rainer Schulter. But he said, we did this thing and where we asked him questions. He said, what do you think is the most important part? Is it the technique, the tennis itself? Is it the fitness, the physical, that you can go a five set match or this how many hours, because tennis has, there always has to be a winner, not a tie. Or is it the mental side? I think it was 70-something% that had responded the mental side.
Sure.
And then the fitness and then the tennis. And he always says the great paradox, but no one trains like that. Everyone trains the tennis, right? Then the fitness and then the mental on the bottom. But yeah, so other drills, for example. So and Alberto was here the other day because he invited us to the Florence Open. His player was playing doubles. And so he was here the other day and he said he did a few drills with Mateo, the same thing that they do here. I had just forgotten, but I remember now because Alberto. But So a volley, and then you put the racket behind your back.
Oh.
Another volley. And then he'll say back. And then he'll go on the back. Or he'll kind of like feed balls and he'll say shoulder. And he has to tap the ball with the shoulder. Hit, he has to hit. Head, he has to head the ball. So it's that mental velocity that they train a lot of. He always says, look, it doesn't coordination, all this stuff. It doesn't really matter if you're very well coordinated, but you're slow.
Right. I was going to say, it's a quickness, a responsiveness.
And the other way around, the same thing. It doesn't really matter if you're fast, but you do it all wrong.
Yeah.
So it's they train that part a lot, that speed, that coordination, but of the mind, right? Yeah. To be very quick. Because in tennis, it's an open sport. You don't have – you can do 100 balls the same way, but they never hit the same ball twice in tennis. It's always there. So you got to be quick mentally. But they do a lot of that stuff as well. So – but like I said, it's – I can't remember everything right now, but it's stuff that I had never seen before. And when I saw it, I even thought, I don't know. But then as you get more into it, you say, yeah, this stuff, I've seen it work. So yeah, it's great.
Do you want to share the name of the academy?
Yeah, sure. It's Profesione Tennis in Calenzano, Italy. So Calenzano is a commune in Florence. And like I said before, it's like 15 minutes away from Florence. The name of the city is Calenzano, and the academy is Profesione Tennis. And the director here, the one I was telling you about the book and all that stuff, he wrote the book with the fitness guy who was great as well. His name is Erasmo Palma.
Okay. And we'll have all that information again in the show notes on parentingaces.com in case you want to investigate a little bit. Yeah. Hugo, do you know, do they take kids like over summer break, over, you know, holiday breaks and things like that? Can kids come train there short term?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said before, anyone can get in touch with me and I'll kind of help facilitate. I guess a bit easier if you know someone. It's not like us where we kind of did
it's everything. Not all about the money.
Let's just go and exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's, if anyone, I can give more information, help them out and kind of set up a method ASMO and they can just come and train however long they want. But yeah, I mean, they haven't really done it before, right? They've had their kids here and but now I spoke to Erasmo the other day. Hey, what if we kind of help out other kids as well that kind of never had this before, right? Let's try some stuff and so let's do it.
Awesome.
Oh yeah.
Awesome. Well, again, we will have all of that contact information on parentingaces.com. Hugo, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a lot today. I look forward to checking in maybe in a few months and see how things are going with Mateo and your family and how, you know, if you're continuing to love being there or maybe it's time for a change, who knows? Yep. And also seeing how your daughter's doing here in the States. It's tough when she's in the States and you're in Europe and the time difference. And it's not like you can just, you know, come home for the weekend. So
yeah, she's over there, but I think it was just yesterday we got her plane ticket to come in December. Nice. It was just last December. We didn't see her in the summer because she stayed there working and making some money, and but she'll be here and I want her to train here as well.
Yeah.
And then we might just go to Hungary and just take a vacation, which we haven't really done. We've always done tennis vacations.
Yeah.
We
go to most of us can relate to that.
But yeah, she'll be here. And what I really want is hopefully she can come maybe in the summer and play some tournaments over here.
Awesome.
That would be fun. So yeah. Yeah. Awesome. My son loves it over here. He is sponsored by Lotto. So he's having a ball.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for taking time out chat with us. And like I said, I look forward to checking back in a few months to hear the progress. Awesome.
Thanks, definitely. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast. For tennis parents, by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.